20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Victory Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you for joining me on this Victory Monday. The Packers pick up a 23-6 win over the Minnesota Vikings, moving them to 2-0 in the division, which is noteworthy considering how they ended in 2024 against the division. They also moved to 7-3-1 on the season, second in the NFC North, and still sixth in the NFC overall. We'll get into all of that today. It's funny, this was a game where afterwards, I'm kind of like, all right, Daniel Whelan played well. You know, Emmanuel Wilson played well. Micah Parsons. There's a couple storylines there. I'm like, there's not a ton of like, I think I have more notes for this one than I have in a while. So we have a lot to dig into in this 23-6 win over the Minnesota Vikings. Before we get there, shout out to our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member, Benjamin Sargent, who is a all-pro member. Benjamin, appreciate that a ton. If you haven't checked out memberships yet, do it. Get after it. It's a perfect time to do so. We still have a lot of season left. Extra episodes every single week, so do not miss that. Of course, you get the members-only Q&A as well. I want to start today by actually going back a day and going into what I had as my checklist for the keys to this game for Green Bay. Not how I usually do this, but I thought the Packers really took care of business today in a way that is even easier viewed or maybe better viewed by going over what we wanted to see from Green Bay going into this one. Number one on my pregame list of things to do for Green Bay or the keys to the game was eliminate mistakes. We saw a litany of mistakes against the New York Giants a week ago. What was probably 3 weeks of NFL mistakes all packed into one game. Thankfully, they got away with a win, but you knew they had to play a better brand of football. Against Minnesota, no turnovers. I don't think they had any drops. Two penalties on the day, just two penalties. It was such a better performance overall where the Packers didn't beat themselves. And when they didn't beat themselves, they easily win by three scores. I thought that was a really impressive aspect of this game, but they completely eliminated those self-inflicted wounds and those mistakes. Number two, I said, just keep J.J. McCarthy being J.J. McCarthy. Well, they hit that one out of the park. 12 of 19, 87 yards, zero touchdowns, two interceptions, five sacks. We'll talk about McCarthy more, but he was brutal. He has been brutal, and they were able to keep him in that funk that he's been in so far, really, since taking over as the starter for the Minnesota Vikings. Number three, frustrate Justin Jefferson. Jefferson went 4 for 48, no touchdowns on six targets. That's a frustrating day for Justin Jefferson. Number four, take away the easy stuff, at least early on. I thought they did a good job of that overall. They didn't let McCarthy, you know, kind of dink and dunk and just live in easy land. They made him, you know, uncomfortable. They came after him. They, I thought, came up on the wide receivers against Minnesota a little bit more, and they were not just letting Minnesota have the easy stuff to kind of, you know, drive down the field and have these elongated drives, at least not throughout the entirety of the game. So I thought they did a good job of that. Number five, be more aggressive defensively on first down. I thought they were, especially there were some run blitzes in this game. It didn't always work, but I did think that Jeff Hafley was a little bit more aggressive on those early downs. Number six, get off the field on third and fourth down. Well, the Vikings were 2 of 9 on third down, 0 for 1 on fourth down. That's a hell of a performance defensively on getting off the field when you need to get off the field. The Vikings could sustain no drives whatsoever. Number seven, attack their secondary and linebackers. They didn't really need to. The defense dominated. They ran the football. They didn't really have to attack, although I did think they were able to get some of those completions when need be. But for the most part, they didn't have to attack the secondary and linebackers all that much. Number eight, I said the defensive tackles had to step up. I thought Warren Brinson really did in this game. I need to go back. Wyatt had two sacks as well. I need to go back and watch Wooden a little bit closer and some of the defensive tackles in the run game. But overall, I did think we saw, or I thought we saw overall the defensive tackles step up in this one. Number nine, make your damn kicks. McManus was perfect in this one. Number 10, don't keep it close late. Packers were up 17 to end this one. They did a good job of that. Number 11, use Chris Brooks on third downs. Check. And then number 12, really the only one that didn't come to fruition in any way, shape, or form, was I said, make this game about Jordan Love versus J.J. McCarthy. you didn't really need to make it about Jordan Love. They made it about J.J. McCarthy as much as they could. And again, he was really poor in this game again, and that's going to be a huge problem for Minnesota moving forward. But they did ultimately make it so that J.J. McCarthy had to beat them, and he couldn't. And that was just a winning formula in and of itself for Green Bay. So overall, what we really wanted to see from this team going into the game, kind of the keys for Green Bay, they checked almost every single one of them, and they came away again with that 23-6 win over the Vikings. My key takeaways in this one, number one, J.J. McCarthy is really, really, really bad. We talked about going into this year of how the J.J. McCarthy, Caleb Williams experience is going to shape the NFC North and the NFC to a real extent, not just now, but potentially for the foreseeable future. I'm not saying that J.J. McCarthy at some point can't make an improvement or be a good quarterback, but right now he's really, really bad. And that's going to alter the Minnesota Vikings both now and in the future. They're basically losing right now because they don't have a quarterback. They've got a pretty solid team overall outside of him, but they just don't have a quarterback. For Chicago, that's a different story. Caleb Williams is playing better and they're on top of the NFC North. I think it's, well, we'll get there eventually in the next couple of weeks when Green Bay's got two opportunities in a 3-week period of time, but we're about to find out a lot about Chicago. This week, they go against the Eagles. They've got Green Bay in their two of the three games after that. But we're about to learn a ton about the Chicago Bears. But they picked up a win again today. And again, we'll see where Caleb Williams and that Bears team end at the end of the year. But certainly trending much better than the Minnesota Vikings are. This was a stat that was put out per True Media. J.J. McCarthy is 851 out of 852 quarterbacks in EPA per dropback among qualified passers since 2000. The only player below J.J. McCarthy is Jamarcus Russell. We are talking about a potential all-time bust here for Minnesota. They're going to have to do something different. I talked about it with Justice, and I went gleefully into detail on this the other day, where I said by the end of the year, Max Brosmer is going to get a start. I told you guys going into this game, when people were wondering, why is Green Bay a 6.5 point favorite? I'm like, watch J.J. McCarthy. It's rough. It was I don't even know if this is I think it was his worst game yet, which is saying something because he's had some bad games already. This was a great performance by the Packers defense, but key takeaway number one, J.J. McCarthy is really, really bad, and the Vikings are in real trouble because of it. Number two, I thought the Packers, and this kind of went a little bit under the radar, I thought today, the Packers really showed off their depth in this game. At running back, Emmanuel Wilson steps up in the absence of Josh Jacobs. At wide receiver, I know they still have Dobbs and Watson, right? But you're without, and Wicks, but you're without Matthew Golden, you know, and you're without Jayden Reed, and you still have three good wide receivers to put out there. I thought that was really important in this one. You're down Tucker Kraft. They rotated through the other three tight ends. You know, you're out Elgton Jenkins. They still have an offensive line that can go out there and play cohesive football. You know, defensive line, Carl Brooks barely played. LVN barely played. You know, you're a little bit beat up there too. Green Bay was able to survive it. You're without Quay Walker. Isaiah McDuffie stepped in. You're without Keyshawn Nixon and Nate Hobbs. Kamal Haddon stepped up. I just thought all throughout the roster, you're not out there with your full deck of cards like you would like to be. And Green Bay played the hand that they were dealt still. And I thought they did a really nice job, especially some of those players like a Warren Brinson, like an Isaiah McDuffie, an Emmanuel Wilson, a Kamal Haddon stepped up in a significant way and really made it so that Green Bay was able to win despite missing some key pieces. Number three, we'll talk about this in greater detail, but I thought the defense was phenomenal. They were fantastic. Yes, J.J. McCarthy sucks, but you still limited them to 6 points, 2 turnovers on defense, also a turnover on downs. And even the field goals that you allowed were 50 plus yarders, right? So I thought the defense was tremendous in this one. Number four, we talked about they eliminated the mistakes really in all phases. And number five, Daniel Whalen is really, really good. He was fantastic. That punt that he had, and then Zane Anderson pushing the player, the punt returner into the ball, the play of the game. And I thought overall, Daniel Whalen just crushed the heck out of the ball. I forget who brought it up the other day. I think somebody in a live chat that said, Hey, this is usually the time right around like end of November where like Daniel Whalen starts to hit like a little bit of like a roadblock and the weather changes and we start seeing that punting go downhill. There's been no signs of that these past couple weeks with Whalen. He looks phenomenal. I thought he was really important in this game as well. Let's get to our Luigi's Pizza player of the game. This was an interesting conversation too. I went through a lot. Emmanuel Wilson, I thought about. He had over 100 yards rushing, filling in for Josh Jacobs, but didn't quite hit 4 yards per carry, was still under that, and did technically have a fumble as well. If it ends up getting reviewed, maybe there was a whistle, or maybe they would have deemed that his forward progress was stopped. But he technically did have a fumble in this one. It was late. The Packers recovered it. So I didn't quite get to Emmanuel Wilson on this one. I thought about giving it to JJ McCarthy, if I'm being honest, for just being so damn bad. And I could have gone with that. I thought about giving it to Daniel Whalen. I thought that would have been worthy, but you know, I don't think he won Green Bay the game. I ended up settling. I don't know if I'm going to say settling, but I ended up with Micah Parsons as my Luigi's Pizza player of the game. I thought he was outstanding. The 2 sacks. I thought he helped, you know, force the Devontae Wyatt one, the first Devontae Wyatt sack. And then, you know, on that play, he ran right through the center. He had a great play setting the edge, which led to a tackle for loss. And there are plays where you're going to see, again, he shows up in some of these plays where he's triple teamed on certain plays. Like it's just a constant impact. And he played all but 4 snaps on defense per Justice Mosqueda in his tracking. He was unbelievable. Once again, already at 10 sacks, I believe, on the season, and adding 2 more today. Another epic performance, I think worthy of being the Luigi's Pizza player of the game. Let's also get to our Habishap Shirotier injury report for this game. Keyshawn Nixon left with a stinger, did not return to the game. Matt LaFleur did say in his post-game press conference that they consider him more day-to-day and would not rule him out for Detroit at this point in time. LVN, I couldn't tell if he got a little bit more banged up in this game or not. Didn't look fully healthy. He was active, obviously, but played under 10 snaps in this game. So we'll have to kind of monitor that throughout the course of the week and see if he can ramp up a little bit more for Detroit. Same thing with Carl Brooks. He only played 3 snaps in this one. He was coming off the injury, so active, but they really did not play him much at all in that game. Jordan Love, he's got what was reported as now a separated shoulder, an AC joint sprain in that left shoulder. It was reported by Ian Rappaport, Tom Pelissero, that if he had it on his right shoulder, he would not have been able to play. Thankfully, it was his left shoulder, so that's huge, but that's going to give him some pain. And I did think you saw, you know, overall Jordan struggle a little bit more. At least I shouldn't say that, just be a little bit more uncomfortable in this game, right? So we're, again, going to have to kind of keep an eye on that to see how he's performing this week against Detroit. Hopefully he's pretty, you know, I don't think he's going to be 100% with a, you know, left separated shoulder or whatever, but we'll see if he can get into a little bit better rhythm. And again, it just looked like he was in a little bit of discomfort throughout the course of that game. So certainly definitely something to keep an eye on. Josh Jacobs, Nate Hobbs, Quay Walker, Matthew Golden all did not play in that game due to injury. So their injuries will be worth monitoring this week on the very short week as we get ready for Packers Lions on Thursday football as well. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, the weather might be changing, but the feeling of being right never gets old. So keep the season rolling on Prize Picks by getting $50 in lineups instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. Now it's time to start getting ready for week 13 as Green Bay tries to sweep the series with Detroit. This needs to be a big win for Green Bay, but I'm going to take both Christian Watson and Amon-Ra St. Brown to have big games in this one. Elsewhere in week 13, I'm going with a huge bounce back from Josh Allen, a strong performance from Justin Herbert, and a breakout from Cortland Sutton. Here's the best part. Prize Picks is super simple. Just pick more or less than at least 2 player stats. If you get your picks right, you can cash in. And even better, how you play is completely up to you. If you want flexibility, choose Flex Play, where you can get paid even if one of your picks misses. And if you want the biggest payouts, go for the power play. No matter how you play, Prize Picks is a great way to put your takes to the test. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. I'm not sure about you guys, but it's a season for hosting a lot of holiday dinners, get-togethers, and big events, and all of that planning, cooking, and shopping can take a huge extra toll on my stress levels when there's already so much going on. That's why I leave the stress behind and rely on Omaha Steaks to help me prepare amazing meals for all of my family and friends this holiday season. And not to spoil some gifts for family members who may be listening, but I've definitely been picking up some Omaha Steaks as gifts, which makes holiday shopping super simple as well. The best part is that you can benefit with their Sizzle All The Way sale, which you can get 50% off. Yes, 50% off site-wide at omahasteaks.com. Plus, listeners get an extra $35 off with promo code PACKADAY at checkout. I'm actually hosting a birthday get-together this week, and the freezer is stocked with amazing steaks and burgers from Omaha, which is making things super simple to prepare and plan for. And if you haven't tried the food yet, it's beyond incredible. I can't recommend it enough. I especially want to shout out their grass-fed, grain-finished beef that has more marbling for exceptional flavor. Now, Omaha Steaks is a family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. So don't miss out on this deal and save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code PACKADAY at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com with code PACKADAY. All right, offensively in this game, this was the drive summary for the offense. Touchdown, punt, field goal. Then you had the kneel downs before half. If we take that out, I'm going to start over just eliminating that, right? Touchdown, punt, field goal, punt, touchdown, punt, field goal, punt, end of game. In total, they put up 23 points. I thought the offensive line looked a little bit better, and I thought the addition of Anthony Belton at right guard was a little bit of a game changer in run blocking. I think that's going to be an important upgrade for them. I want to see the all 22. I'm not going to say unequivocally of like, yep, just Belton better than Morgan at this point. He kind of felt that way, at least in real time. And I just think he has, as Matt LaFleur talked about it after, the demeanor that he has. He's a little bit more of a mauler. He's a little bit more tenacious. I just think that's going to really add something to this run game. And you start getting, by the way, Aaron Banks, along with Sean Ryan and Anthony Belton on the interior. You have the ability to move some more people. I think we saw that today against Minnesota's run defense. Again, less than 4 yards per carry for Emmanuel Wilson. Some of that was late. There were some missed blocks up front. They got to get that cleaned up. But I thought overall, there were, again, some more signs this week, like there were against the Giants, that this offensive line might be coming together a little bit more. And I really did like the addition of Anthony Belton. Started as a rotation in the first half. In the second half, Anthony Belton played every snap at right guard. That's a big change. I'm excited for it. And I think it's really going to help Green Bay moving forward if they can stick with it. Emmanuel Wilson, I know he had the under 4 yards per carry or whatever, but he deserves so much credit. I thought he ran really hard in this game, ran behind his pads. I thought he was decisive. Again, maybe that one fumble, we'll take a look at a little bit closer when we get to the all 22 as well. But that one, they ended up recovering anyway. He had some big, I know there were some failed third downs, but he had a couple third down pickups as well. Ran hard in the red zone, 2 touchdowns, just a good overall performance. And having to fill in for Josh Jacobs is no small feat. He did a great job of it. No, don't. Emmanuel Wilson is not better than Josh Jacobs, but he played a fantastic game. I do think he has a little bit of a different juice to him, maybe. That's just a little bit of a change of pace, not a ton. But I do think, especially this week, if Jacobs is back, Wilson showed that he's capable of, you know, carrying the load when he needs to, and maybe just being a little bit of a change of pace from Josh Jacobs, especially as Jacobs tries to recover from the injury that he's currently going through. Jordan Love, not the greatest Jordan Love performance ever. I thought he had a couple of throws that he missed, including one for a potential first down to Dontavian Wicks. His box score on the day was 14 of 21, 139 yards, 6.6 yard average, no touchdowns, no picks, took 1 sack for 4 yard loss, 76.1 QBR and an 85.2 passer rating. He didn't have to do a ton. And I did ask him after the game as well of like, hey, when you see your defense is completely balling out and you've got a lead, is there a part of you that is trying to be extra cautious because you know that that's the only way that the offense the opposing team's going to get back in the game? And he said, yeah. He said something that they are cognizant of and making sure that there are no mistakes in that situation. And then, Will D followed up with them, kind of after the question I asked and had a similar question of like, is that a conversation you have on the sidelines? He said, yeah, we absolutely talk about it on the sidelines. So you could tell they were being conservative and being very cautious. The defense was playing amazing. They didn't want to make any mistakes. Jordan didn't. He kept the ball clean. And I didn't think he really had any turnover worthy plays. There were a couple that were maybe borderline on close, but he also came up with some big throws as well. That third down play to Dontavian Wicks over the middle. There were a couple out throws to Christian Watson that had to be on time. And I thought when he had to come up with something, he did, but he just didn't have to do a ton of heavy lifting in this game. I did like those quick throws to Christian Watson. I thought that was a we talked about that with Justice Mosqueda, of like adding that against the Giants. They did. They kept it going this week against Minnesota. I think that's going to be an important throw for Jordan in this offense moving forward. They did lack explosive plays in this one. They did not have a play over 18 yards. 18 yards was their longest play in the receiving game or the passing game. They did not have any 18-yard rushes. So they still need to find a way to generate a bit more explosives on offense. That's a little bit of a problem. But again, when you're down Tucker Kraft, Josh Jacobs, Jaden Reed, Matthew Golden, it's hard to consistently generate those when you're missing some of your biggest playmakers. Now, Kraft isn't coming back, but Jacobs, Golden, you know, those guys will. Jaden Reed will. So hopefully they can get those guys back and performing at a level that can help them with some of those explosive plays. But it was certainly lacking in this game. And then very conservative overall. We'll talk about that when we get to the coaching portion of this. But overall, solid. Not a great day for the offense, but a winning day for the offense, all things considered. And again, we'll talk about that approach a little bit more when we get to the coaching segment. Let's move to defense. Defense for Green Bay allows field goal, punt, turnover on downs. Field goal, punt, 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 interception, interception. They were awesome, especially in the second half. The first field goal that they gave up, by the way, was buoyed by the fact that McManus kicked it into the end zone and they got it at the 35. They only went, I think, 31 yards on that drive to get their field goal. If that's like, if they would have kept him to their own 25, Minnesota's punting away rather than kicking a field goal in that situation. So the special teams has some blame for that first field goal, I really think, at least. I thought the turnover on downs was huge. They did get a field goal before half, but again, that was what, like a 59-yarder, something like that? The defense didn't give anything in this game. They made the Vikings earn everything, and in the second half, they completely shut them down. For Zach Cruz, the Vikings had -1 net yards in the second half of this game while having 3 turnovers, 1 on special teams, 2 on offense. 3 turnovers, -1 net yards. That's all you need to know. The defense completely annihilated them in this game. JJ McCarthy could do nothing, and that basically won you the game almost before it started. Defense was tremendous. Run defense was a little bit iffy. All right, a little bit iffy at times, but Mason and Jones combined for 17 carries for 83 yards. It was a 4.9 yard average. They had the one long run of 22. Without that, it's 16 for 61. I know you can't eliminate that run. They earned that run. But outside of one 22-yard run, it was 16 for 61, which is less than 4 yards per carry. It at times was a little bit of a struggle, but I think for the most part, they did a pretty good job. And it's not anything where I'm like, oh my God, they allowed Jones and Mason to just rush right through them. 17 for 83 isn't the worst thing in the world. And again, Minnesota couldn't do anything besides that. So if you're going to limit them, you know, especially those two combined to 83 yards, probably just a winning performance. And in this case, it was. We talked about Micah, 2 sacks, run defense. He was all over the place. Evan Williams continues to come up huge. He had the interception. He got thrown right to him, but he also came up and made some plays in the run game as well. Isaiah McDuffie filling in. What a big time performance from him. Had the interception. I think there's a chance that when the stat corrections come through, that gets changed to a sack and forced fumble by Rashawn Gary and a fumble recovery for Isaiah McDuffie. But it doesn't matter at the end of the day. It's a turnover. He made a great play on it one way or the other and gets the turnover there. He was all over the place. I thought, again, there were a couple run fits that maybe he could have done a little bit better. He had one of the biggest hits of the season on TJ Hockenson. Just a really sound performance from Isaiah McDuffie overall. We talked about Warren Brinson. He had 15 pass rush snaps in this game, and he became the number 3 defensive tackle, with Brooks not playing and or only more than 3 snaps for Carl Brooks, and then 3 for Stackhouse as well. Brinson was the number 3 tackle. He had 15 pass rush snaps. He had 5 pressures per Next Gen Stats and a half sack. That's 1 out of every 3 rushes he's getting to the quarterback with a pressure. That's big time stuff for Warren Brinson. I was really high on him once I saw his tape coming out of Georgia. I thought he got severely underdrafted. And he, you know, when he's had the opportunity this year, he's made the most of it. I thought this was another great example of that. Like the bounce back from Devontae Wyatt, 2 big sacks. Like seeing that. I want to see how the All-22 looks from a pressure and from a run defense standpoint, but love seeing him get in the backfield and make those 2 big plays. Rashawn Gary, there was still some talk of like, hey, he didn't have the impact. He, on one of those Wyatt sacks, Rashawn Gary was the one with the immediate pressure. Rashawn Gary was the one that knocked the ball out on the one that McDuffie either picked off or recovered the fumble, whatever you want to end up calling it. I thought Gary was pretty good in this game. He had a couple big run stuffs as well. I know it feels like sometimes we get, maybe I'm at fault a little bit. I talked about, kind of last week of, hey, that Gary contract is going to start getting some buzz. And it did last week, big time. But it does feel like once we get on a narrative, we can't change it. It's like we collectively apparently decided that Rashawn Gary's not good now. So now even when he does good things, it's like we're going to ignore those good things. I at first glance and on the rewatch, I thought Rashawn Gary had a pretty damn good game in this one. We'll see what the All-22 says, but I thought he made some big plays and had some good run defense as well. Kamal Haddon stepping up huge. And not only that, Matt LaFleur after the game said, quote, he has made as much progress as any player we've had here. Think about that for a moment. As much progress as any player, and what he's basically saying here is that he's coached in Green Bay, that he's made as big of a jump as any player that they've had in Green Bay during his time as coach. What a freaking statement. What a freaking statement. There were some buzz, some rumors that Green Bay really liked Kamal Haddon. We didn't know if that was going to be Bo Melton or Kamal Haddon coming in that spot. They clearly liked Haddon. And it at first glance, again, J.J. McCarthy couldn't do anything. They couldn't pass the ball in this game. So we'll have to see if he plays against Detroit, that it's a horse of a different color, right? And that's going to be a much bigger challenge. But comes in, hasn't played a defensive snap and goes out and balls out. Like that was a pretty big time performance from Kamal Haddon. Carrington Valentine too, thought he had a really nice day. Shadowed Justin Jefferson in the second half. And again, Jefferson had four catches in this game. Big time stuff again from Carrington Valentine. And per Aaron Nagler, Packers have now allowed fewer than 20 points in all six home games so far this season. The first time that's happened since 1969. This defense at home, really, really good so far. As far as special teams go, they had a couple minor things to kick off to begin the game, which again, I thought set Minnesota up for a potential field goal. And then the Dobbs punt return where they're kicking from their own end zone and he catches the ball and all he has to do is run forward and he's going to get it into Minnesota territory. And instead he pauses and then decides to run horizontally. It's just go forward. And it's just insane to me that we've gotten to the point from a punt return standpoint where the only thing that they clearly care about is just somebody back there who can catch the ball. And so Romeo's the guy. He's not a punt returner. He's just not a punt returner. They don't have a punt returner on the roster. It still blows my mind that that's the case. But outside of those two plays, I was trying to go somewhere good here. Dobbs did have a good punt return as well. He did have one good punt return. They made all their kicks. Zane Anderson made the play of the day, rushing the punt returner into the football and then recovering it on his own. That was a huge, huge play. It was 10-6 Packers at halftime. They get the ball to start the second half. They punt the ball away. Minnesota's going to get the ball with the opportunity to go and take the lead with a touchdown. Based on what we saw all day, I'm not super confident they'd be able to do it, but they're able to stay multiple in that situation. They can still just run the football. And instead, you get the punt that Zane Anderson knocks the returner into, recovers it. And because of that, Green Bay goes up 17-6. And now it's McCarthy throw fast, and he throws two picks after that point. That's the biggest play in the game. Huge stuff for Zane Anderson. Whalen, we talked about, was fantastic. And then I thought there was really good coverage on the kick returns as well. So this is one of the better special teams games that we've seen in some time. A couple of small things, again, to clean up. But overall, this was, I thought, one of Rich Bisaccia's group's best efforts. Certainly this season, but maybe even in his tenure in Green Bay so far. Some miscellaneous notes. Inactives for the day were Josh Jacobs, Nate Hobbs, Quay Walker, Matthew Golden, all injured. And then healthy scratches, Lucas Haversick, Jamon Johnson, and Donovan Jennings. I don't quite get the Jamon Johnson call-up if they were going to just deactivate him. The only thing that I can think of is that if LVN was not going to be able to go, like as a last-minute thing, now they've got an extra player to play on special teams and an extra defensive player. That's about the only thing I can think of. But I'm not sure why they activated him, paid him extra money. That does count against the salary cap. It's not much. It's not a big deal. But just to not actually play him, that was an interesting decision. We got a lot of six offensive line looks in this game. I'm excited to watch that on the All-22. I thought that was a pretty effective route for them again. zero snaps per Pierre Strong, the other player that they called up from the practice squad. He did not have a single snap on offense or on special teams. Musgrave was once again the third snapped tight end in this game per Justice Mosqueda. He had Fitzpatrick at 40 snaps, Wiley at 26, and Musgrave at 24. Josh Wiley outsnapped Luke Musgrave for the second consecutive week, as did John Fitzpatrick. As we talked about, Carl Brooks only had three snaps in this game, as did Nasir Stackhouse, but Warren Brinson, 21 snaps in this game. So a huge upgrade for him. Also, I just wanted to quickly talk about the Devontae Wyatt sacks in this game. I saw a couple people say both of those plays, or at least maybe one of the two, should have been safeties. Both of those were called correctly. The one where Wyatt throws him into the end zone, the start of the throw, the start of the sack takes place out of the end zone. So that's where the play is dead right there. Once the sack is, you know, he's thrown backwards, you don't unfortunately get credit for the loss of yards there. It's where the sack began. So no safety there. And then on the other one, same thing. When that sack started, there was enough of the ball outside of the end zone, not a safety. The way I viewed it, and I thought it was correctly officiated, no safeties on either of those plays. We'll be right back. All right, so it's 2025, and we're all pretty up to date on the insane amount of scam emails and texts that we're getting at this point. But if I can be real for a moment, I recently got an email. I won't go into detail on the company or what it was, but this thing was so insanely real. I still had doubts, double-checked the sender, the link, everything about it looked authentic, but it wasn't. Thankfully, my browser saved me in that situation, but even when we're on high alert, just one small mistake could be the difference in getting scammed financially. Here's the thing. Scammers know the holidays are the busiest time for everyone, which can make us all targets for scams. That's why Cash App builds in protection to help keep your money safe while you're checking off your shopping list. If you're about to send money to someone for a deal that's too good to be true and Cash App flags it as a potential scam, they'll warn you before you send the money. Cash App also gives you an extra layer of protection with features like Security Lock. You can require a PIN, Face ID, or fingerprint to unlock your account and move money, so even if someone gets a hold of your unlocked phone at a holiday party, your money is right where you left it. So gift yourself some peace of mind this holiday season and download Cash App. For a limited time only, new Cash App customers can use our exclusive code to earn some additional cash. For real, just download Cash App, use our exclusive referral code SECURE10 in your profile, send $5 to a friend within 14 days, and you'll get $10 dropped right into your account. Terms apply. That's money. That's Cash App. Cash App is a financial services platform, not a bank. Banking services provided by Cash App's bank partners. Prepaid debit cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC. Promotions provided by Cash App, a Block Incorporated brand. Visit cash.app/legal/podcast for full disclosures. All right, let's talk about coaching really quick. Matt was extremely conservative in this game, especially in the second half. Extremely conservative. He admitted as much. Said they took the air out of the ball and said it with a smile on his face, and also said, yeah, I've never called the same running play as many times as I called in one game as we did in that one. Guys, I know I'm a non-self-proclaimed Matt LaFleur apologist/defender. They have a quarterback that can't score points, that can't do anything offensively. Meaning the Minnesota Vikings. Once Green Bay got 17-6, Matt knew all you needed to do was just run clock and run the football. They honestly, dead serious, 17-6 lead. If every time they got the ball, they just put Whalen in on first down and punted the ball away, Minnesota was not going to win that game. That's how bad it was. So what you're trying to do is just bleed the clock as best as possible. And running the football is the best way to do that. And I'll add on top of that, Jordan Love is banged up. He's got a bad shoulder. Emmanuel Wilson was running well. He really was. You've got a lot of weapons that are out. Jaden Reed, Tucker Kraft, Matthew Golden, Josh Jacobs. So you're limiting some of your opportunities just because some of your weapons are out. You've got a lead in the game. The one thing you want to avoid is a crazy turnover, interception, or anything like that. If there was ever a game to get conservative and just say, guys, we don't have to do anything here, it was this one. That's not even to mention that you've got a game coming up on Thursday. Just bleed that clock. Just bleed the clock. They have an offense that can't do anything. we don't need to do anything. The onus is not on us to score any more points. It's over. It's done. It's a, you know, the game is in the bag as long as you don't make big mistakes. I understand that it was very vanilla. I understand, like, I do not care. Not in this one. That was the right approach. And I said this on the live post-game show. Coaches do not care about, like, how much they won by. They just want the win. And could they have maybe gone for more points at some? Sure, they could have. I also thought some of the third down situations were like a unique circumstance. Matt kind of talked about this. There was one play where clearly it was a canned, you know, call to a run. And on that play, they didn't block it up right. And the linebacker, Eric Wilson, came right through and made a stop. And there's another play where Matt calls a third down run. And the plan is to go for it on fourth down. But the third down run, because of bad blocking, makes it so that they lose yardage and he takes the field goal. And then there's a third and one where, I think it was their third and one or third and short, where it looks like there was maybe going to be a challenge. So they went hurry up and handed it off, and Minnesota was kind of all over it. So I thought there maybe could have been a little bit better third down calls. But outside of that, the approach that they took based on who they were playing was the right approach. I have no issues. Now, other games you can talk about and say, hey, he took his foot off the gas. Absolutely. Not defending any of the other ones. In this one, taking the air out of the ball, calling a bunch of runs, getting out of that game with a win, with not many snaps as you're ready to get to Thursday football this week. That was the right approach in this one. Have no issue. And I mean, no issue with it whatsoever. Also thought Jeff Hafley was fantastic. I did think some of the third down calls, again, just kind of going back to that, if they just could have converted on a couple of those, I think that would have been giving them the real opportunity to maybe get this thing to like 30 something to 6 and maybe make it look a little bit better. But we talked about some of the circumstances there. Also, they were still 7 of 14 overall, 50% on third down in this game, which is still really, really good. They're still one of the best teams, if not the best team, in third down conversion rate. I know a couple of those are definitely frustrating today, but it's still a winning performance from a third down standpoint. Where the Packers stand right now, 6th seed in the NFC, as we talked about. They're half a game behind the Bears in the NFC North, a half a game behind the Seahawks and the Eagles in the NFC. They're half a game ahead of the 49ers and Lions. The Lions currently outside looking in. The 49ers are currently the last spot in the NFC. Those are all going to be teams to kind of keep an eye on. The Packers moving forward in their next, or at least their final games, I should say, at Lions, Bears at home, at Broncos, at Bears, Ravens at home, at Vikings. Green Bay's next 5 opponents are a combined 38-17 on the season. 38-17, and only the Lions of that group of 5 are not in the playoffs. Only the Lions. Now, the 6th one is against the Vikings. That's their easiest one left. But Lions, Bears, Broncos, Bears, and Ravens coming up in the next 5 weeks. That is going to be a very, very, very tough slate of games. Meanwhile, Packers, Lions, Bears, 49ers, Seahawks, the teams that you want to keep an eye on, are combined 4-0 this week, with the 49ers having their game on Monday Night Football against the Carolina Panthers. Let's quickly talk some Packers-Lions. Noon game on Thanksgiving, beyond massive implications. This one is so freaking huge for what could happen in the NFC North in the rest of the season. Playoff seeding, who gets in, who doesn't. There is a ton on the line here, potentially. Lions open as 3-point favorites. The Lions are 2-2 in their last 4 games, 3-3 in their last 6, and they've gone loss, win, loss, win, loss, win. So that would mean this one, by pure pattern recognition, should be a loss, and Green Bay should pick up the win against Detroit. Those recent games, loss at Kansas City, win versus Tampa, loss versus Minnesota, win at Washington, loss against the Eagles, overtime win against the New York Giants. The big thing here, as I talked about, Green Bay, 65 snaps on offense, but 40 plus times running the football. They were the ones dictating. That's huge. And played only 44 snaps on defense. If you want to get into a Thursday game, trying to recover really quick, well, not playing many snaps is a great way to do that. Green Bay did that. Meanwhile, the Lions just defensively played 77 snaps, 33 more snaps defensively than Green Bay played. And they gave up 517 yards. And now, after playing overtime against the Giants, Detroit's got a short week game against Green Bay in a really, really big game, that is a big advantage for Green Bay. A big advantage. Green Bay is going to be, I'm not going to say rested or well rested, but they didn't have to work super hard, especially in the second half for this one. Detroit did and went into overtime. That's going to be a difference. If Green Bay can come out strong, hopefully Detroit runs out of gas. That's a lot of football in a very, very short period of time. All right, playoff odds. Green Bay currently has a 77% chance to make the playoffs per the New York Times simulator. They have a 39% chance to win the division and a 2% chance to get the one seed and a first round bye. If Green Bay were to beat Detroit this week, their chance to go to the playoffs would go to 91% with a win, would go to 68% with a loss. That's a pretty big difference. If they won this game, they would go up to a 66% chance to win the division, a 2/3 chance to win the division. They would go down to a 24% chance, a 1 out of 4 chance with a loss. Big difference this week, depending on this game. With a win, they would go to a 6% chance to get the one seed. With a loss, they would go down to less than 1% chance to get the one seed. Some final thoughts here. I thought this was a really good, really sound victory. No need to nitpick here. Green Bay did what they needed to do on offense to get out of there with a win. The defense was fantastic. The special teams had one of their best performances. I would say A- to B+ overall performance from the Packers, and always great to pick up a win against the Minnesota Vikings. Elsewhere, Packers defense had won this game from the word go. Simple as that. I don't know what Minnesota would have needed to do to put up more point production, but it probably didn't involve JJ McCarthy. I'll just put it that way. Now it's time to get ready for Detroit. Should be a really fun game. Cannot wait for this one. Just a real quick look around the rest of the NFL. Colts had a chance to kill the Chiefs. They didn't. We'll see if that haunts the rest of the NFL. But Chiefs stay alive with a last second win in overtime against the Indianapolis Colts. Cowboys stay alive against the Eagles after the Eagles were up 21-0. Rams absolutely demolished the Buccaneers. Bears beat the Steelers in a close game. Not ideal for Green Bay. Lions beat the Giants in overtime. Not ideal for Green Bay. Panthers. We want the Panthers to beat the 49ers on Monday Night Football. Per the New York Times simulator, Green Bay's playoff odds go to 80% with a Panthers win, 75% with a 49ers win. So a slight difference there. Not a ton, but it's an extra 5% if they were to, if the Panthers were to win that game. Quick look ahead to week 13, Packers at Lions, a huge, huge game. And then on Friday, you've got Bears at Eagles, the two games of the week. Those are going to have massive implications in the NFC North and in the NFC overall. We also have Chiefs at Cowboys, which kind of feels like an elimination game. Rams at Panthers and Bills at Steelers. Should be a very fun week of football. Pack-A-Day Live coming up with Mike Wall, noon Central Time on Monday. Members Q&A will be on Tuesday, likely around 7 p.m. Happy hour, I'm leaning towards Wednesday right now. It could be Friday as well. I'll keep you guys posted through the rest of this week. Keep an eye on the YouTube channel, on the message board, as well as on social media as well for updates on that. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Guestford, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelstinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hayden Radomski, Devin Lane, Gons USA, Alexander Newell, Dan Miller, Bill Reinhardt, Richard Morales, Les Nino, Beast Bumblebee, and Benjamin Sargent. Enjoyed this game for Green Bay. I hope you guys did as well. A 17-point victory. Nothing to ever take for granted in the NFL, especially the way things are going right now. Thought this was an awesome performance, especially by the defense. Now it's time to get ready for Detroit. We'll see you guys all week right here on the Pack-A-Day podcast. I'll see you guys soon, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.